just live a thousand days. Each parting thing won't go for me, darling. Jesus, love.
This is Gavin Bryars behind us right now with Jesus Blood Never Failed Me Yet from the sinking of the Titanic. We heard Harold before that from new one called Linear B. The track was called SS Kaladingi. Yelka did the boar from Four. We heard Ibelis Guardia Ferraguti and Frank Rosalie doing Turbulencia from Mestiz. Limbo Districts did Two of Screams from a 7-inch single. The Intercommunal Free Dance Music Orchestra gave us Blues por Miguel Enriquez and Chant pour l'Amérique Latine. Marion Brown at the top of that set with the Shadow Nose from Three for Shep. Archie, that is. My name's Scott. Been a delight to be with you here today, friends. I'm going to say goodbye now and turn things over to Tim Buckley, because I wanted to hear a Tim Buckley song today. Stay tuned. I'll give you the ID in a minute. Thanks for listening, friends.
I lit my purest candle close to my window, hoping it would catch the eye of any vagabond who passed it by. And I waited in my fleeting house. Before he came, I felt him drawing near. And as he neared, I felt the ancient fear that he had come to wound my door and jeer. So I waited in my fleeting house. Oh, tell me stories, I call to the hobo. Stories of old, I smiled at the hobo. Stories of cold, I wept to the hobo. And I waited in my fleeting house. Said the hobo, no more tales of time. Don't ask me now to wash away the grime. Oh, I can't come in, for it's too high a climb. And he stood before my fleeting house. Then you be damned, I scream to the hobo. Turn into stone, I wept to the hobo. Leave me alone, I knelt to the hobo. Walked away from my
You are tuned to Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. My name is Scott. Thanks for being with me today, my friends. Look forward to seeing you next week. Stay tuned for Hardy White.
Oh, Blue, what are these? I'm absolutely addicted to them. Oh, those are pain pills. No, these. Oh, those are cheese nuggets, but the bowl next to them is pain pills. Why do you have those out on a buffet? Well, you said put snacks out for the writers, and I was trying to update the old Saturday Night Live writer's table bowl of cocaine and weed with something more updated and regional. That's a new joke I'm working on, friends, for a sitcom, my sitcom library. What's that? What's a sitcom library? Well, I'm trying to write as many jokes as possible and then put them in categories like sitcom or stand-up. Now, I'm not going to use them, but I want to be productive for future generations. There's a lot of things that I make and do. A lot of the baked goods I make, I actually preserve in polyurethane and turn into Christmas ornaments. Someone says, you're baking cookies. I would love to have one. I go, no, no, no. These I'm going to freeze in resin like they're a corpse that's going to go, a flayed corpse that's going to go on display of one of these body exhibits. Imagine doing that with both a cookie and a friend of yours. And maybe he's holding the cookie. You go to a body exhibit, you go, well, that's the one holding a cookie. Now, have you seen one of I don't think they have these anymore. And one of the reasons is it was like a traveling art exhibit, except the art was human remains that had their skin liberated, or we would say flayed. When St. Bartholomew, the martyr, died, they say they flayed him. They took off all his skin while he was still alive. And he still professed his love of God. Or did he? How could you tell? He was screaming the shrill screams. I think he's saying, I have kept my faith steadfastly. He might be, but, you know, all those nerve endings exploding. Why are you telling that story? And why are you speaking to me about preserving jokes and bodies and baked goods? Well, there's nothing that I do that doesn't have some sort of underlying reason. It's just that none of them are available to me or to you. But I'm sure that I'm saying this all for a very good reason. I really am. And one of the reasons is my love of you as a human being who's trying to live a life. Oh, my goodness, it's so hard. And guess what? I don't even know who you are. And I'm going to just here I am putting my hand in my head. I'm closing my eyes. I'm going to use my psychic. You're doing it wrong. I bet you are. Because maybe there is no right. People have told you that. But then the same people the next day say you're doing it wrong. So who knows? Also, where are they when you mess up? Said, you said there was no doing it wrong, but now I'm in prison. Say, I don't know, man. So maybe I want to speak to you and comfort your heart a little bit by speaking about free will. What is free will? Is that what you're going to speak about? Not directly. Now, the reason I don't like to speak about things directly is the same reason that I don't like to gossip about my neighbor at Denny's, especially if I'm in a booth, because there's nothing more embarrassing than telling a story about somebody, and there they are, sitting with their back to you, and their head is as close as it can be without being on in an intimate situation. And there you are, going on about them, spilling the bean dirt, tea. And they can hear you. How embarrassing. That's why I don't speak about very important things sometimes. Because, first of all, they'll be misunderstood. You think I'm talking about you. A lot of people think that. You know, if you are critical of human beings, a lot of times they say, hey, they're describing me. I go, no, I was actually describing Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan. Well, I'm not going to pick a historic figure whose name I can't say. I should... Like I said, I believe I said this last week, I could do the Star Trek two-thirds human thing. So like Hitler or Genghis Khan or Shuvak from Tuvok 3. They're all such bad people. So Genghis Khan was mad? I don't know, man. It's just like some people, they don't seem bad in history, but then having them as a neighbor can be burdensome. And I think that's probably like that with most politicians. I don't care what political party you're in. You don't want a congressman next door. I wouldn't. Or anybody. Maybe somebody. You know, someone reminded me the other day that a lot of times celebrities go on to be mayors or things, or even more. You know, there was a president who was an actor, but Sonny Bono was mayor of Palm Springs. And then I think Bob Denver was actually the emperor of Gilligan's Island. How about that? Nehemiah Persoff held him get up there. He's a kingmaker. And then he ruled that island with an iron fist or a coconut fist or whatever. He said, from now on, things are going to be different around here. And Thurston Howell III tried to pay him off. And he said, your money's no good here. That's a confusing idiom. My friends, I feel like maybe I am a confusing idiom, that I'm an expression. We all are. Aren't we an expression? Like, it's hotter than Hades in here. That's an expression. But none of us, with a few exceptions, have been to hell. And so many daily invites from perfect strangers that we'd think, why haven't I been there? I've been invited so many times. I'm going to have to go to hell. And one of the things you might do, like you're going anywhere when you go to England or something, I'm going to go look at one of those YouTube travel things around London so I know where all the hidden rivers are. Well, when you go to hell, you'll want to consult something like Dante's Inferno. And I think that's a great guide. It's a little dated, because some of the rings of hell have different people on them now and names that you would recognize, which is fantastic. And I'm not going to say them now because I want my show to be evergreen. What's that mean? That means no Mae West jokes. What's a Mae West joke? A Mae West joke is a Georgie Jessel joke. What's a Georgie Jessel joke? It's like a Mae West joke, but then you say something about, I don't know. That used to happen to me when I'd watch Monty Python as a child. I'd think, do I need to know past prime ministers to understand this? Because they're dropping names like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And there's American humor that's like, too, say, I don't want, I was watching 30 Rock the other day, say, Condoleezza Rice. I don't know who that is. No, I do. I'm kidding. But let's say I was 5 years old and I'm watching 30 Rock. So I don't know. I'd be like, I don't know who. I can't do a baby voice. I'm sorry. I do a lot of voices. That's what I can't do. Isn't that funny? And I was a baby. I don't remember. I think I just talked the way I do now. Maybe I had a different accent. Oh, yeah, you never know. I mean, I've lived in different states, haven't you? One of them was a near vegetative one. And I won't tell you this, which one it was. I don't want to editorialize. Besides, the state I grew up in, they have a law. You can't say anything bad about vegetables. That's why I don't know. You know, maybe that's me. So I don't want to even self-criticize. Say I'm so hard on myself. Don't be. Oh, my goodness. Come here. Get yourself a hug. Well, you don't know what I've done. Isn't that good? Isn't that great? I think that should be, I'd like a confessional that's like that. You go in and say, forgive me for I've sinned. I say, all right. Like that. Like, why do I have to be specific? It's like, believe me, it's a doozy. It's all you don't need to know specifics. The reason I give specifics, and if I'm giving you specifics, why do you need to be hidden behind a screen? Like, what's going on over there? How are you using my story? So I prefer not to disclose anything. I'm not much of a confessional person. I think if I've thought it or done it, wouldn't it make it worse if I shared it? If I don't need to? My goodness, especially if it doesn't benefit me particularly. I don't want to tell you. People ask me my opinions all the time, and I go, I know you don't believe this. The first 10 things I tell them are, They're stupid. They're uninformed. They're solely from my perspective. They're influenced by my social group. I don't know what to tell you, but it won't do you any good knowing. Oh, my goodness. All you want to know, listen. I think America used to be like that. You write down your name. You can't tell how it's pronounced. They pronounce it for you. That's how it used to be. You'd come in with your surname, and then they'd get the dumbest person available at the time to be writing things down in a book. Everybody's ancestors knew this, and they've told you this story. Your great-great parents or whatever told you this story. You'd come in, and you go, you know, my name. What's your name? And you go, my name is John Brown. And they go, Brubergrabben. Like that, because they couldn't hear anybody's, it was very loud, granted, but nobody's name got written down correctly. I'm just going to write down poop. And then they did that for most people. So a lot of people don't have their original surnames because of these very thick, hard of hearing immigration officials. So you come in, but then you just write down your name. And then the next thing you write down is what you'd be willing to bring to like a get-together, like a potluck brunch or something. And because people came from all over, they bring their specialized dishes. I'd love that. I went with a child one time to an elementary school thing, and it was bring your family's traditional food. And I'm not lying, three people brought KFC. But I'm in Kentucky, and it's traditional. But other people brought wonderful things. You're like, where'd you get this moussaka? Where'd you learn how to make that, right? And it was all fantastic stuff. And then you're just like, oh, this is amazing. What is this? And they tell you, and you go, well, where in Tibet are you from? I say things like that. And I go, I'm not going to know. But tell me anyway, because I have to, I'm setting up a story about myself. And so I got a list of questions, and that's one. I did that recently. Where was it? I said, where in Germany are you from? I won't know. And then I think she said Berlin. And I went, oh, okay. Well, it's one. So I have been there. But otherwise, I don't know where. I don't need to know. And it's so wonderful. When you meet me, my friends, and you know this, it's like we're meeting at the Villages, and we're two old people who are just going to lie about our past. Why? Because most people's working life is baloney boo. It really is. You know, not everybody says, yes, I used to be the captain of the 6th Fleet. Well, I don't know what that is. I'm going to tell people that. Don't do stolen valor if you're going to make something up. But you can, you know, you can, what do you call it? Put some flourishes on your normal life. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because a lot of us, our existence is uneventful and boring, and our jobs that we find uninteresting, and they grind you down. And then if you have any kind of retirement at the end, you know, what then? What then? Well, I guess I could have a hobby. So I think that's a lot of our modern lives are that. Or maybe, you know, it's full of destitution and violence. So there's that. But few people, you know, at the end of the day say, oh, you know, I don't know. I made some films, wrote some books, traveled around the world, and this and that, started a religion. But that's very rare. And for most of us, when people ask us even what they do, I always lie. And so it was not bad. No, I think not unless it's only bad, I think, if I'm trying to get a job, which I also do a little bit. I do a combination of things. One is I let them know right up front if I'm getting a job what I can and can't do by being mediocre right out of the chute. If you overperform, do you set expectations very high? And I'm only being slightly flippant because sometimes people do that. They pretend to be someone they're not. It's like, I know that I am an easily distracted, semi-lazy, and you go through your, but you don't want to tell them that exactly. But don't write too much on the application. Then if they still want you, they know what they're getting. So you know what you're getting, right? Yeah, I'm really lazy. And they still want you, that's okay. But sometimes if it's just a social situation, I'll be, you know, hey, you the great thing to do, here's what you do, is you name a movie. Have you seen this movie? And you say the movie. If they say yes, you talk about the movie a little bit. If they say no, you say, I was in it. Now, very few people will IMDb you. And you say, well, don't IMDb me because it's under a different name. And I go, what name? That's a struggle. But few people go that far. And they'll just go, really? Go, yeah, I don't act too much anymore. That kind of thing. Well, I don't think that's good. Unless they're a director that then puts me in a movie based on that lie, I think it's all right. Now, if that's what I need, good gosh, are you going to... You're going to begrudge me that? I just admitted I had this little unfulfilling life and I felt like very small and kind of unworthy of even being alive, and you're not going to let me fantasize a little or lie to this person who's very, well, they seem very judgmental anyway. If you're impressed by somebody's resume, you're probably a very shallow person to begin with. I think the problem is this. It's not that people that are unaccomplished or uninteresting. It's a lot of times their confidence has been shattered and they feel not worthy or unconfident. So they're a little bit down on themselves. And that's gotta be, it's almost everybody I know. There are some people have had some success or done something that's made them feel really proud of themselves or given themselves, this is more important, endearing confidence. Say, I know I'm able to do this because I have done it a lot. And for some of us, we stumble into that to go, man, I've been doing this thing a long time, and now I'm kind of good at it. And that gives me some confidence and some satisfaction. But even that may be temporary because the body part that you used to do it may fall off or something. And so then what? Who are we then when stripped of everything? I was listening to a spiritualist person, I don't know what you call them, people that sell books about their ideas that have no basis in truth, talking about the two us's inside. You know, I don't like me. There being two me's. Well, there are two you's inside. There's something called an autonomic nervous system, and then your conscious self. So I can touch my nose, but I can't change my blood pressure. So there is a you that's walking around doing things over which you have no control. So say, do I have free will? Yes, then why can't you lower your blood pressure? Because I can't will it. Most of your nervous system, you can't will to do anything. And what about your behavior? You know, you are at the mercy of a lot of different things. So our free will is a commitment to a social construct, really, too. Because if we don't have that, then our legal system breaks down and everything. But just between you and me, we don't always have a lot of control about what our body does or wants or even choices we make. Because if you're hungry and you say, I'm going to eat that thing, maybe you don't know it's bad for you. And you keep eating it and then, well, I told him, you know, I told him not to do that. And he did it anyway. Well, who are you? I'm a guy who hates him. Well, why would he listen to you? Well, because... See, I don't know. It's very complicated. And it's like honor your mother and your father. What if they're horrible people? Well, I got that one. At least I'm doing 6 correctly or whatever the number commandment it is. They like me, but they're making me violate all the rest of them. So how is that? I'm going to have to figure out if there's some commandments that are better than others. Oh, my friend, I ask nothing of you. Well, you shouldn't. I know, and I don't. Well, why would you? I don't. Yeah, but okay. We're good. I don't understand what the problem is. Oh, my friend, all I'm asking is that you let me give you some companionship. I know enough not to give you advice, and I can tell you, though, some things I've seen on my journey here to the part of life where you go to the doctor more. If you can, not everybody can or has access to it. So sometimes it's part of your life where you rub salve on more parts of yourself. I don't even know. You can make your own. Oh, I'm going to start giving recipes for healing balms that I've designed. It turns out that a lot of complaints, certainly arthritis, can be made absolutely the same by rubbing something on the joint, be it mayonnaise or sriracha mayonnaise or any condiment, but also some things that are inedible. And like what? Like what? Oh, I don't know. Like some kind of mango. I'm not big on mango. Well, some people love it, I know. And I'm going to alienate them by saying I don't like it. Isn't that funny, like, how our aversions can extend to people who don't like the same things? Have you ever had that be with a friend? And you go, oh, man, they got fresh strawberries. And the person goes, I don't like strawberries. And from that minute on, you just can't look at them the same. You go, I know there are some things that we're just not alike, you know, and that feels like a big one. And yes, can I love somebody who doesn't like strawberries? Of course. Can I love somebody who doesn't love that I love strawberries? No. And the strawberries in this case represent a... what? I don't know, Spinozan worldview? What? I don't know. I'm just trying to, oh my gosh, I'm trying to be helpful. At the same time, I'm trying not to say anything. Because really, you don't want to add anything. I see being on the radio is exactly like walking in the woods and they say, leave only fingerprints, take only note, or... It's a more elegant expression than that. Take only stacking rocks, leave only impressions, be they foot or finger or anything else you might stick in something soft while you're out there, like a walking stick in mud or who knows. My goodness, you know, they have found footprints of prehistoric, that is way before historic, people. Did they even have feet? Unbelievably, yes. Walking their footprints in muddy, shallow mud. And then what happened after that was never muddy again. That's the last muddy day. From that point on, that mud turned into like concrete. Just that was the last. They say, it's such a nice, muddy, moist day, Mommy. Say, yes, little Neanderthaling. And they're walking along the beach like that. And then that beach the next day, it's like, man, there's footprints are still there because everything's drying up and everything. And then they died. But what a way to be immortal. You say, those are your footprints. Look at that. You've been dead so long, no one remembers your name. I mean, people haven't remembered your name for like thousands and thousands of years. Can you imagine that? And now, but it's a certain type of immortality, is it? No, it's not even close. Isn't that funny? It really isn't. Even they find your bones, or they have found the skull. Can you imagine that? Be an example of your entire species from a, they see it as an evolutionary era, and you go, no, it's the way the world is. I was one of the greats. You know, I was Pananthropus or whatever, but I was so good. Look at me. We didn't have clothes or anything, but we had rocks to hit with. And that was the way the world was. We didn't see ourselves as primitive or evolving into anything. So that's another idea that I find difficult, that we're headed towards something. Who's we? We, you know, we. What do you mean by we? We. We are... things that have eyes that look like babies, that, you know, like cats, dogs, some other people, anything like the baby, anything I mistake for my baby is we. And it could be, sometimes some creatures, you know, could be a lizard even. You go, look at that. He's got little eyes, expressive eyes. So anything that you make irrational attachment to because you mistake it for your own children, I think that's what I mean by we. When Thomas Merton was at the Western Kentucky Seminary, what do you call it, seminary? Is that what you call it? It was a, where the monks are.
Monastery.
Monastery called Gethsemane.
Yes, keep going. You were right. Why'd you say seminary?
I don't know. I don't know. That's where you study to be one of them. He was cloistered. You know, he saw the other monks, but he actually lived, he was allowed to live alone, but they wouldn't ever leave, and they're not allowed to leave. They have to stay there at Gethsemane, make their fudge, they make fudge and cheese, and they pray many times a day. And they've got Latin names for all the times of days. Morning Z's, 11 Z's, all that kind of stuff. Sexting is one. Then, but he had something wrong. He had to go to the doctor in Louisville. So they said, all right, Louisville's not that far from where he is. So you can go to Louisville, but that's it. You know, because you're going to, anyway. So he went. And I've talked about this many times. You have talked about this many times. Talked about this many times. So when he was there, he's standing at the corner of Walnut and Chestnut and whatever. ML King and Walnut, wasn't called that then. And he had what he went on to call a Louisville epiphany, or somebody did, where he looked at all these people and he felt this connection with them. Just this joyous sense of belonging to humanity, outside of himself. I love all these beautiful people and their fragile lives. And at that moment, he just is wonderful. He was it's so great to be able to take a break from the monastery as you're cycling manic and you're having this great religious idea, just the perfect storm. They've got a plaque even. It's so great. So He just felt this huge experience, this numinous experience, maybe, as they say in the religious biz. And how beautiful and moving. I haven't really had that. I've had in New York City. I was standing on a street corner. And I thought, good Lord. I had it in Japan. I thought it even more in Tokyo. I thought, oh God. A lot of people is what I thought, but that's not exactly the Louisville epiphany. That's more like Hardy's, the Tokyo freakout, we call that. There's a plaque and everything. Hardy stood here and he just thought, wow, I am nothing, because there are so many people, how could anybody possibly notice me? If there is a God, then it's one of those obsessive types, you know, that's got everything is in a, it's all organized, but I don't think that can't be right. Oh, my goodness. You know, I'm going to have a special soon. I'm going to digress just shortly to say this. I have a friend, and we are working on a special show for you where we will answer some really profound questions about physics and the meaning of it all, and I think you're going to love that show, and I'll let you know when it is. We're still working on, because we actually haven't figured out what our theory is yet. So we're going to come up with it. It's so great. It's like having a scientific paper accepted, but you don't know what the topic is yet. I just need that acceptance, though, as sort of a motivator. That's why it's so good to have a show. I always thought that I'm glad to have a radio show in case I ever have an idea. And here it is. It's a wonderful placeholder. Say, Hardy, we like your ideas. Who's saying that? You. I know it's me. I know that's my voice. But look, when it comes to, I'm going to give you the only piece of wisdom I have. When it comes to making an argument for God, and we'll discuss this, as you know, and you must know, that's an absurd proposition anyway, to argue for the existence of God. So what happens is, if you do it in a serious way, you come to sort of two dead-end but winning conclusions. They're not really winning, but it's the closest you can get. The first is that you make God some sort of necessary condition for existence. There you go. Or a first cause, is what they say. So there, you can't really argue that. You go, you know, whatever you come up with is a first cause. I'm going to name that. So there you go. You can't, it's not airtight, right? And it's not very satisfying. Because he's saying, well, exactly when I was five, who was hearing my prayers? And you go, oh, that's a fella named Clarence. We saw him in the movies giving out wings. And the other one is the Pascal's Wager sort of thing where, like, well, you know, the consequences of not believing are pretty steep. So you might as well. So that is the threat of bad consequences is another one. And I'm going to say this to you. What if those two things are really talking about you and your belief in yourself? And one of them is that you necessarily exist. The thing that exists is you. So you exist. Because if you use the word you at its broadest sense, doesn't matter who you are. You get it. You get a capital Y, you. Isn't that beautiful no matter what you do? And the other is the kind of Pascal's wager for self-belief. You might as well, because the consequences of not believing in yourself are steep. So I love people who are self-deluded. I don't make any distinction between crazy people, self-deluded people, and people who have actually accomplished things. Sometimes you can't tell them apart. Sometimes they're the same person. You'll see that now in the era of YouTube or anything. You got a person out there who is just nuts and all self-confidence, and all of a sudden, boom, they're famous. Now their self-confidence is warranted. But yesterday it wasn't. Not much has changed. So, oh my goodness, that's why there's so many people always trying to, I don't sell it, but they were in the 70s, they were like, you're okay. All right, give me money. I'm not giving you money to tell me I'm all right. It's like paying for a positive diagnosis. But what I'm saying is, I'm also saying you can work out at home without a gym. You don't need to spend any money to burn calories. Isn't that something? That's the other secret people don't want to hear. Why? Oh, I'll tell you, because sometimes if you don't commodify your desires, you don't know whether you're doing anything to work towards them, and you don't know whether your actual work is a worthy effort, because you think, if I can get what I desire without doing all this, spending all this money, then what the heck? And your whole world collapses. So sometimes that's a problem. Sometimes people like to pay for things because then the kind of worth is guaranteed, because there's a sort of worthlessness to free things. And that's even in nature, you know? You have a beautiful, look at that beautiful open space and everything. The next day you come back and there's a gate there and they're charging admission. And the internet did that. I remember in the early days of the internet, and I was like, this is fantastic. Everybody open field. And then you come back the next day and you go, who's AOL? Why do they want money? So that's the way it is. And now we give value to it, and that should satisfy you. But if you would like to go deeper, if you would like to unlock the real secrets of human existence, if you would like to be as subversive as you could possibly be, then there's a couple things you need to do. One, tell no one about Hardy White. Don't spread the word. I never say that, do I? Do you ever say, tell your friends about Hardy White. Tell them to listen to the show. No, I never say that. I always say, don't tell anybody where you heard it. Don't say you know me. There's no point. This is just between you and I. Well, don't you want? No, not particularly. So, there you go. This is if it were secret information, why would I want everybody to know? See, I don't want them to know. This is between you and me. This is subversive. These are the dangerous thoughts. And that's because if you unlock the key of being all right with yourself and being sort of in the world, it makes you unpredictable, unmanipulatable in a lot of ways. And some people, that makes you worthless. Do you understand? If you can't, my whole viewpoint is I got to get people in to see my circus. And so I relate to the entire world as possible customers for my circus. And I go around and I greet people and I try to charm them so they'll come in. I try to convince them. Now, let's say you say, I don't like circuses. I'm morally opposed to them and I don't find them entertaining in any way, shape, or form. Do you think that person now has the time of day for me? Step aside. I'm only interested in people who are interested in circuses. If you're not interested in circuses, you are of no interest to some. When you're of no interest to some, you feel a little left out. Well, maybe I'm an outsider. Maybe it's wrong not to like circuses. Everybody's telling me I should. And there seems to be this lack of acceptance. Is that a philosophical thing, or is it just because I'm a bad customer? And I think maybe a lot of your problems are you just some of your bad customers. Some of you have discovered some modicum of self-fulfillment. Some of you have unlocked a secret to some joy. Now, how am I going to sell you joy? Since my joy depends on selling you joy. Or I've made it that way. I haven't, by the way. Oh, my goodness. You don't want to go the hardy way. Because the arc of my life is I kept increasing the disappointment. I kept being more and more disappointed with myself. And I kept being had more and more unrealistic expectations for myself. As I would fail at things, I'd raise the bar simultaneously, making it absolutely impossible to please myself or in any way feel confident or succeed at a thing. And so something I grabbed at was something I knew to be true, and that was that often there is a long-term dividend for tenacity. Sometimes if you stick to a thing, then you can, with lots of hard work over many years, become mediocre. And that's better than not being in the game at all. Like, you know, and gosh knows you're doing what I was given. You can't make any more brain. You know, you can be curious. And also, there's a correlation. Sometimes it takes families a lot of times to even have certain values that allows you to become curious or informed. Do you understand? So I meet some accomplished people and I go, oh, you're extraordinary. And you go, my parents were professors. I go, oh, that's fantastic. You know, mine didn't always work indoors, you know. So I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying it just took a minute then to sort of get in that value habit or something like that. So you can't control where you come from and you don't get a do-over. And so, boy, you're just blessed and wonderful. I thank you where you are. Just the that's the way the X-Men is supposed to be. When you read the X-Men, you go, everybody's a mutant. Everybody, all your little quirk, the thing that makes you weird and makes you feel like an outsider is your thing, is your power. What? Well, not really. I mean, it is and it isn't. Beautiful. That's something to latch on to. That never makes me feel good, actually. I like being, sometimes I just like being the same. You know, we're all on the same team. I got the jersey on, you know. Because sometimes it's a burden to be unique or to be yourself, you know. I just want to blend in. I like when we're all the group. I love when we're rowing and we're just going stroke instead of yelling my name, Hardy, like that. I don't row. I don't want to give that impression. It's funny, some things I lie about and others I won't. That's one. But I know not to lie about military service. Oh, my goodness. I remember when I did that television thing, I was going through some hats. I was like, I had lots of hats, you know. And they go, well, let's see your hats. And one of them, I bought a hat when I went to the, it was in Charleston. I went to that museum with all the dry docked ships and submarines. And so I bought a hat. Now, I didn't intend to wear it around because I'm like, oh, they'll think I was served on the SS Clamador. And I did not. So I was just one of my hats in my act. I have other things like that. I did not play for the 1930s baseball team House of David. But I have one of those. It's just I collected hats for a while. And so they saw that and they said, put that one on. That looks good. So I was worried, though, because I think now they're going to think, even though everything else is pretend. You know, it was like a World War II movie, and they put a uniform on me, and they're going to think I'm General Patton. But I know that's not true, but I still feel there's certain things I feel like I don't want to pretend to be. And that's one. What's the other? I would dress up as a priest. or a rabbi. I think that'd be fine. I wouldn't want to be mistaken for anything where they call you to do something, like a paramedic. You're a paramedic, come quick. That would be bad. But other things I'd love to be mistaken for. One of them is I'm obsessed with now is a joke writer, because nowhere in any job description does it say good jokes. And, you know, just a joke is such a broad thing that I think I can write them. I think I have. And they don't have to get, you know, a house. You say something's a house, that's very broad. What, just some walls and a roof? I don't even know if it has to have all those things. My goodness. Change the definition if you don't like the one and get a new one. And you can say, well, that's how I use the word. My goodness, I'm giving out such terrible advice today. I don't want you to take it. I want you to let it wash over you. So I'm just giving you examples of things. It's like I'm naming the planets. I'm not saying go live on Venus. I'm just putting it out there. Say, here's Venus. It's very hot. And the air is made of ammonia or acid or something like that. And it smells like many U.S. cities in the summer. But it's not habitable. Let's fly now to Mercury. Mercury is the closest planet to the sun. It's the size of a pea. Mercury's atmosphere is made of 409 or something like that that you can't drink. Fly now, myth me out to Mars or the red planet. The red planet is a bit of a misnomer, as it's more like a burnt orange, we can't tell because the light isn't good. We need to bring some quality white light to Mars to see what color it really is. Mars's atmosphere contains things that can't be breathed by, what's the fella that was in that thing where he got stuck on Mars? He couldn't breathe the air, but he's just an actor. So maybe trained people would be able to do something to their lungs. I don't even know. These free divers that go down and hold their breath like that, they are getting up to very high numbers right now. So there's a chance that somebody could go to Mars, hold their breath the whole time. I don't know if anybody's looked into that. Let's do it. The human being can do remarkable things if you allow them to do that. Imagine people walking around on the moon nude because they're holding their breath. That'd be great. What a great photo opportunity. So let's go fly now. Why are we doing the planets? Because it's an allegory. I'd like to compare things. So I'm talking about planets, but I'm really talking about ways to live your life. So fly with me now to the next planet, which is Saturn. Saturn is named after the god Apollo, and it is has a ring around it, and the ring is not a true ring. A lot of looks like those frisbees that has a hole in it. Have you seen those? It's just like a flat hoop. It looks like it could cut your head off, but it's just for tossing. And it looks like that, but it's not. It's made up of little rocks and things like that. It's just from a distance. Did you ever see a road? You go, that road looks good and smooth, but you get up on it and it's gravel. Same way. So you think, oh, let's land on the ring. That's how they thought originally. We're going to land our spaceship on the flat ring. That'd be a great place. And then we decide where we're going to go from there. But there isn't nothing to land on. By the time you get there, tiny little things, and also space dust, which was super popular in the 70s and will mess you up, and I mean permanent brain damage. But if you go into Saturn, that's where the fun begins, because there's a whole, even though the air is, again, it's made of chlorine and something else that's in pools, muriatic acid. And because of the chlorine and muriatic acid, they combine just to make tepid pool water. And so we get people live there. There's cultures there. Sun Ra is from there. Other people that are related to Sun Ra, and a vibrant music scene. I love going to Saturn. I go there frequently. in a different time. You have to, it's not just where the party is, it's when. So if you go now to Jupiter, now I do not like Jupiter. Jupiter has a hurricane on it that's been going for, and because of that big hurricane, there's been a hurricane party going on for centuries. And those people are wasted, you know? And I don't know if you've ever been to a hurricane party, but a lot of times, let's say if your condo is really vulnerable, let's say you're in Miami or something, say this hurricane's going to slam into us, we got this condo on the sand. Instead of evacuating, we're going to get drunk. And this is called Irwin Allening. So you do that and have this party as the windows are blown out and everything. And if you survive it, you don't remember it anyway. So it's kind of worthless, but people do them and everything. But on Jupiter, I don't know how long that's been going on. Can you imagine? And there's so much we don't know about the solar system. If it weren't for podcasts, I wouldn't know any of this. This is stuff that I didn't learn in school. I've learned it since. I put on YouTube has a really short little ones. And they'll tell you, say, just... And they should be calling, it's not social media, it's social in media res, because it's in the middle of something. I don't know. I don't get either end of the interview, but then I get Neil deGrasse Tyson going, did you know that the Earth is like, this is not that way. And then he says something mind-blowing. And they'll have a third person there sometimes that represents you, who's dumb, and go, oh, I did not know that. I kind of think, oh, that's mind-blowing. Like, oh, and that's so refreshing. So, oh, yes, I'm like that. It's so exciting. I'm curious but dumb. And that's okay. That's how we get smarter. You might not get smarter, but that's how you do it. That's the road. How do you get to, I'm thinking about walking to Tibet. And say, well, you know, conceivably, maybe. I don't know about the Bering Strait. I haven't been there in a while, but, like, that would be the way. All right. So just because you know the way doesn't mean it's doable necessarily, but you're on the road to a thing. That's a beautiful thing. Oh, I'm on the road with you. On the road again. I just can't wait to get off the road again. I like making music with my friends. And if we're on the road, that's a bad place to make the music. With my friends, because we might get hit by a car, and then we'd have something to write about, wouldn't we, when we got hit by the car, because we were playing music in the road. In the road, on the road, with my friends. I'd love to travel around and play gigs with my bass and sleep on people's couches. That's not, no, I wouldn't. That would be sarcastic just then. I don't want to do that. I love people. Oh, my goodness. And I want to travel around and see a few of them here and there, but not big groups. I love you. I'll go to a show with you. Let's do that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to go on a tour. I'm going to tour the country. And you and I come to your city, and we just go, and we all see a show. I don't want to have to put it on. But we can see it, and then we can talk about it later or before or after. You know how people gather in the lobby and all that kind of thing? That would be fun. I think that would be good fun. So we see a show, and afterwards we're all hanging in the lobby, and we go, look, do you want to continue this conversation at, and you name a place that serves food that's open late. That's how I live my life. If I've got to do the performance, I got to come up with something worth saying, and that's never happened to me. How do you have a radio show? The same way that the Three Stooges had a career. Mo. And by that I mean momentum. I think you just start doing a thing. And then if anybody goes looking for a person who does it, there you are. Isn't that amazing? So start smearing Sriracha mayonnaise on your joints. Because that could come up. And then you'd be the one doing it. So I think that's great. A lot of times the rest of the world is very slow to acknowledge innovation like that. You don't worry about that. Listen, if you were my child, what would I tell you? I'd tell you, listen, you get one life. pretty much. You may or may not, but let's go with that. We're doing like a wagering philosophy of life. Like, how do you place your, what's the best bet? I would say your best bet is to be good to yourself. And that doesn't mean screwing over your future self at all. And I think it means keeping your eyes open and don't be afraid to see. Don't be afraid to see yourself and others accurately. And don't use that as a weapon. So you can see yourself accurately without, you know, beating up on yourself. For instance, I may be thinking about myself and I sort of reach the edges of my intellect and I find how smart or dumb I am and then I see it and then there you go. It doesn't make me feel good or bad. It's like looking in the mirror and you say, that's my nose. There you go. You can accept things and change things at the same time.
How so?
I accept that my diaper is dirty. I'm now changing it. That, like that, I guess. So, oh my goodness. You don't have to say, or you can wear the dirty diaper. I'm not judging. That's up to you. And you should be aware of the consequences. Just letting you know. That's another thing. Oh, okay. All right. Oh, here's a big let. Here's some advice. Every prophet in the Bible, I didn't come up with this. The prophets in the Bible, a lot of times what they have the gift of is clear vision, not fortune telling, which means that they can see the consequences of things. You know, like smart people, they work through scenarios. They say, if you do this, this bad thing will happen. What happens consistently, with one exception in the Bible, is that when they are right, they are blamed for the failure. So understand that sometimes seeing things as they are doesn't always pay off. But would you rather be blind? Would you rather blindly stumble into these things? Or would you rather have your eyes open? And I say, have them open. Who did it happen to? Who was right? Jonah was right, and he felt stupid because he saved souls, but he looked like he was incorrect. So would you rather save people and be wrong? Or would you rather be right and have everybody crash into a wall? Y'all are going to destroy yourselves. And they do. And you get to go, I was right. You're still not going to get any glory. But what if you said, you're all going to destroy yourselves? And they go, okay, we'll change. And then they don't. You don't get any glory. My dream is to help you without you ever knowing it. I would love that. I don't think credit is good. I want to be the stranger you accidentally bumped into that made you not want to hurt yourself or something. I absolutely feel you. I understand this struggle. Not completely, because I'm not that smart. But I am trying to. I am here with you with my eyes pried open, trying to look at difficult things, trying to open my heart, trying to be brave because I'm not fearless. And we will do it together. It just feels better when we're together. I don't care who you are, if we're a group and we all feel that positivity-ness, that it really does make the experience better. And the only thing I can say about being alive is that it's experience. I don't know why it is. I don't know where we're heading. I don't know what they want. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what the origin of the universe is. I don't know what mine is necessarily. I just know that I'm having this experience. And that there's a thing called joy. And there's a thing called pain. And there's various degrees and descriptors for all those things, like grief or surprise. But it is an experience, and I want to experience it with you. And so to do that, I think you should let me write jokes for your... You've always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Let me send you some jokes. And then you have, and they won't, they'll be great. They won't, be funny necessarily, but they'll be in joke form. And I think that's important. So I don't know. I'm not asking for any money or anything. I just got this word of knowledge that there was somebody out there saying, I've always wanted to be a stand-up, but I'm not funny. And all my friends say, no, don't do it, but I want to. Well, this is for you. Then I'm thinking about you then. And just I'll write you just some to begin with, and then you see if you like them doing them in front of the mirror. And if you don't make yourself sick, then maybe we got something going. Oh, I wish I could do things like that. I have these great ideas. I'd make a great drunk. I don't drink, but that'd be... I know that like I could get drunk and just come up with some great plans that I wouldn't remember the next day. I've got them. That's in me. And most of the time I suppress it or I catch myself. But it would just be... It'd be great to...
You know, my God, you know what we're going to do? You and I are going to start a podcast. It's not a magazine. And it's not a podcast. Or a film album. But I'll tell you what it is. It's a new, brilliant format. That would be me. And you could tell me more about it. What are we going to do? Do you have any microphones?
Something like that. And then we would, oh my gosh, we'd conquer the world. I used to have a lot of moments like that when I was younger, I think. Did they pan out? Sometimes it's brilliant to just do a thing. See it through. The next time you have an idea to make a movie, go ahead and make it. Well, I don't have any money. Go. You don't have to. Got a phone, don't you? So you can make them for free now. And then somebody would, if it looks great, somebody would be more than happy to make money off it for you. Not for you, for them. So, you know, give it a shot. You don't know. You could have some idea that could make somebody else very, very rich. You know, why are you withholding that? I always think that sometimes the devil will come to me, and the devil knows I'm impressed by garments. I love a good garment. So the devil will often be in really high quality, well made garment with a high quality, well made fragrance. And this is hard to say no to. And devil say, hey, how would you like a bigger audience? And how would you like updated website? It might not be the devil. This might be one of those web developers. I get a lot of spam like this. Hey, saw your website. I love it. Have some suggestions. I go, well, I don't have one, but bless your heart. I'm sure I'll still take your suggestions. No, let's you and I make a movie. Come on. I have an aunt that just died. We'll use all that money. What are we going to buy with it? A hat. We should get a really good hat. Just take $10,000, buy a good hat, and shoot the movie around a hat. Because then that'd be the star. Because who sees a $10,000 hat like that? So that's a good idea. That's one of my good ideas. You do drunk. That's too broad a drunk. You got to do a subtler drunk. Real drunks, you're like, it takes about a half hour, and you go, wait a minute, you're drunk. I've had meetings like that at work, and you go, wait a minute. So it takes a little minute. They're not everybody. It isn't like Arthur or that Dudley Moore movie, and that's very broad. He's kind of the slurring type. My great aunt was a slurrer, though. She says like that. She talked like this. So that was how I thought everybody, she was maintenance drunk, the bless her heart. Oh, beautiful person. And I felt bad for her. Felt real bad, you know. I talk about free will. You wonder, she wouldn't have done that to herself or others if she was really in control or that compassionate side of her was able to do anything about it. Bless her. So... How do you avoid that? I don't know. Oh, my goodness. If I knew, I'd have secrets, and I'd give them to you. They'd be free, though. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for listening, and I will see you again next week.
Twist name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins 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 name was Ebony. Yes, yes, yes.